The following Dharma discourse was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmn.org. Thank you for listening.
This koan is from the Gateless Gate, case 26. Two monastics roll up the bamboo blinds, the main case. The monastics gathered in the hall to hear the great Fayen of Qingliang give Taisho before the midday meal. Fayen pointed to the bamboo blinds, and at this two monastics went to the blinds and rolled them up alike. Fayen said, "One has it, the other has not." The commentary. Tell me, which one has it and which one has not? If you have your true eye open at this point, you'll know how Master Fayen failed. Be that as it may, you are strictly warned against arguing about has and has not. The poem. When they are rolled up, bright and clear is the great emptiness. This great emptiness does not yet come up to our teaching. Why don't you cast away emptiness and everything? Then it is so lucid and perfect that even the wind does not pass through. Welcome back, some of you. I guess that's just going to keep happening. That's a good thing. So we are concluding an introductory retreat this weekend, and it's interesting how over the years with this particular retreat, for some reason, oftentimes there's a kind of a theme or sort of a commonality of questions or concerns that are brought by the group who largely don't know each other. And so there's some sort of something happening that brings this group together. And this weekend, the things that I was hearing and noticing were questions and about the Dharma in terms of things like forgiveness, atonement, loss, letting go, healing. And the Buddha's journey, his mission, if you will, his teachings are, in a sense, not all about this, but much about this, because there is more. And so how to encounter the teachings in such a way that they point us towards the essence, the essential nature of things, point us towards those things that we need to see. How do we learn how to ask the right question, for instance? How do we know what should we actually be focusing on and what is not so important? If you think of yourself as a tree, and in that tree is you, your body and mind, your history, all of your life experiences, your relationships, your work, the whole thing. Some of the teachings point to the branches and the limbs, the leaves, the things of our life, the things we recognize that we are engaged in, that we struggle with, where our questions often lie, where the suffering seems to be present. And the teachings point directly to that. And that can be very powerful because there's a recognition, there's an affirmation of those things. And then a pointing to how to take them up within the Dharma. Some teachings point to the roots. The branches and leaves are easy to see. Everyone sees them. And they are an essential part of the tree, right? Without those, the tree cannot live. But other teachings point to the roots, which are not so easy to see because they seem to be hidden beneath the soil. And so you actually have to excavate a bit. And they really form the foundation of the whole tree. The whole tree sits on those roots, in that ground, connected deep into the earth. And those teachings are harder to see and harder to be. You know, when you do that, when you excavate, they're dark and moist and all tangled. You know, they're not immediately, to most, probably as beautiful as what's above ground or as engaging. And some teachings point to the whole tree all at once. Koans are like that. This koan is like that. And so there are aspects that we can see and recognize, and other aspects that will remain dark, unavailable to us. Fayen was one of the great masters in the Zen tradition, 10th century China. And his story is of how he came to study with his teacher is kind of interesting. He was on a pilgrimage when he was a younger monastic with some other friends, and they got caught in a heavy storm, and so they found a temple, small temple where they stayed, where the master Dzhang was the abbot. And so they stayed for a few days until the storm passed, and then they were leaving to continue their pilgrimage. And Dzhang was going with them out the gate. And as they were reaching the gate, Dzhang said, quoting the Diamond Sutra, said, "You know, all things, the whole world is mind. Every phenomena exists because of your perception. I have heard you speaking about this while you were here." And then he pointed to a big, heavy rock, and he said, "Now tell me, is that stone in your mind or outside of it?" And Fayen said, "It's in my mind." And Dzhang said, "Oh, you traveling monk, why do you carry around such a heavy stone in your mind?" And Fayen couldn't respond. And so all the others went on, and he stayed. And that tells us something. All the other students heard the same thing, but he stayed. And so he worked on that, and he worked on that. He took that up as a question, as an inquiry. And he kept coming back to Dzhang with one answer after another. And he was a very learned man. He had done a lot of study. He knew a lot about Buddhism. And so he kept drawing on what he knew and kept presenting that back. And Dzhang kept saying, this isn't living Dharma. This isn't alive. And so Fayen would just go back and study even harder. He got to the point where he was forgetting to eat and sleep. He was consumed. And then finally, he was completely exhausted, depleted. And he went to Dzhang and says, "I have no word to say, no thought to present." And Dzhang calmly said to him, "If the Dharma is to be brought out, it must be perfect and manifest." And at that, Fayen came to awakening. "I have no word to say, no thought to present." The bucket was empty. When we started Ango, I quoted the Tathagatagarbha Sutra about Buddha nature, in which it says, "Hidden within our kleshas, all of our afflictive emotions and habit patterns and attachments, greed, anger, delusion, there is seated, augustly and unmoving, the wisdom of the Buddha, the vision of the Buddha, the body of the Buddha. Good people, all beings, every being, though they find themselves within all sorts of entanglements, have Buddha nature that is eternally unsullied, untainted, perfect, and manifest, and is replete with virtues no different from the Buddha's. That is our basic nature. That's what the Buddha realized in his enlightenment. That, in a sense, is where we begin practice, is with faith in that. That we are not coming here to obtain something that we do not have. We are not coming to discard something that we do have. That's based in the old thinking. The faith mind says, this nature is perfect like vast space. It is never excessive and it is never lacking. In the Fascicle on Buddha Nature by Master Dogen, he quotes the Buddha who said, living beings are all Buddha Nature. This Buddha Nature is continuously abiding, continuously present. It is not changing. The Buddha realized in his own search before he was enlightened to seek liberation in anything that was impermanent would eventually disappoint, because it would, being impermanent, would disappear, would dissolve, would come apart. So it would no longer be something that could be relied upon or could be a refuge. And so he understood that liberation had to arise out of something that was unchanging, unconditioned, that was not a creation, nothing that he could create in his mind could ultimately free him. A student once asked Master Fayan, what is the ultimate teaching of Buddhas? Fayan said, you have it too. You have it too. Throughout your body, all over your body. And yet Buddha nature is not something. It's not a thing. It doesn't have a location or an address somewhere inside of you. If we opened you up, right, we would not find it. And because it is not anything, it can appear in a multitude of forms. Having no fixed form, it can appear as any form. In our consumer society, we're taught that our happiness, we're very often taught that our happiness comes through what we can acquire, what we can get. Whether it's an object, whether it's a title, whether it's power, whether it's relationship, that it's acquisition. And that will fill that hole, that will complete that incompleteness, that will satisfy that dissatisfaction. The fact that no one has actually ever succeeded doesn't seem to deter us, right? Maybe that's because so many of us who are still committed to that path aren't willing to admit, own up to the fact that it's not going to work. And so here you have arrived complete, you will depart complete. But so what about all of these traits? What about all this greed, anger, delusion? What all about all this chaos we can bring into the world? And so here one day in the hall, Master Fayan was getting ready to give a talk in a hall just like this. And there was light coming through the windows, and so he pointed to it, and a couple of monastics jumped up and rolled up the blinds alike. Rolled them up. I guess he was wanting to bring light in. Rolled them both up alike, and Fayan, watching them, said, one has it, one has not. And then he went on to give his teisho, which the students may or may not have heard, because they were wondering, what did he see? Which one has it? Which one does not? How did he know that? They both rolled the blinds up alike. There is Buddha nature, there is practice, there is realization and enlightenment. To realize what cannot be seen, touched, or known. Fayan said to Dizhong, I have no word to say, I have nothing to present. And at that moment, he was ready. He didn't know that. He didn't come saying, this is going to bring my enlightenment. I am going to say this. Dizhong is going to say something. He just was speaking the truth from his place of poverty, of destitution, of spiritual openness. No one has ever possessed Buddha nature. The Buddha did not obtain enlightenment. To realize, to begin to see more and more that all kinds of having and not having, of right and wrong, of high and low, is all based on our relative perception. As Dizhong said, the three worlds are nothing but mine. All phenomena exist because of your recognition of it. This is a basic teaching. That we think that things have objective existence and reality outside of ourselves. When we open our eyes, we're just in a very neutral state, observing something, seeing something that has its own autonomous existence. We don't see that our mind is mixing in that moment all of our history, all of our associations, all of our expectations, everything we know, our likes and dislikes, into that image, so that the image instantaneously becomes, in many ways, more about our mind than about the thing itself. And in that, the Buddha said, all of the pain and suffering of the world is born. Well, if that's true, then why does Fayen say one has it and one has not? Isn't he just doing more of the same? In the commentary, Shibayama says, an old Zen master commented on this koan, saying, this koan aims to arouse the great doubt in the mind of everyone who hears it. If you were to try to understand the significance of one has it and the other has not with your intellect and reasoning, it would be like looking for horns on a rabbit or a horse. In other words, you'll never find it. The real intention of Master Fayen is to arouse the great doubt in the mind of each student so that you will immediately cut off all of your dualistic thinking of gain and loss, right and wrong. In the Zen tradition, we speak of these three aspects of great doubt, faith, and perseverance. A great doubt is not doubt in yourself. And that's what most people immediately, oh yeah, I got that. No. In Buddhism, actually, it's considered a little bit of a question, a curiosity. Why would you doubt yourself? You have Buddha nature. You are complete already. Why would you doubt? Well, we are taught to. This doubt is doubt in samsara. It's doubt in the plan, in the script, in the promise that if we just do this, if we just keep our head down, don't ask too many questions, don't examine, don't turn up that, pick up that rock and look and see what's underneath. Don't dig down into the root system. And you work hard, you'll get it all. Great doubt is doubting that, doubting the very nature of who we are. What is this? Faith is faith in the teachings, faith in the Dharma, and ultimately and necessarily in yourself, in your ability to have that doubt, to ask those questions, to engage the Dharma. Everyone who brings himself to practice has some of that. And then perseverance holds both of those in balance, because if there's only doubt, that just sort of eats us up. If there's only faith, feels good, but we never get off the couch. Both of those together are very dynamic. And then as we engage practice, then we have to persevere. We have to keep going. We have to keep coming back to it, drinking from that spring. And so Fayen is stirring that up. Daroshi used to speak about the teacher seeing that the student is in a cage and wanting them to break free of it, they build another cage around them. Because the cage that we have built, we largely don't see. We don't see it. That's one of the great challenges of practice. We don't see the self. We don't see these entanglements. We don't see our mind, our consciousness, infusing into our perceptions and creating a world in our mind. And so the teacher builds a cage. Oh, I see that. And so one has it, one has not, Fayen says. How much confusion and conflict has come from believing that this one is lacking and this one is superior? Well, ask anyone who is on the receiving end of that, who has been put into that position of inferiority. In the Lotus Sutra, last week we studied the passage where the Buddha is revealing that there are teachings that have not been taught to an assembly of practitioners who have believed themselves to be having fully arrived, having nothing more to learn. And as he begins to offer that teaching that has not yet been heard, 5,000 of them get up and walk out. The Buddha said they were overbearingly proud and arrogant, that they had not attained what they supposed they had attained. They had not understood yet what they supposed they had understood. And because of this, the Buddha said they did not remain where they were. A very simple line. No, they left. But what is he really saying? They did not remain where they were. They got off that seat of study. They got off that seat of enlightenment. They got off that seat of possibility. And you can think of Zazen as just that. Remain where you are. And as all of those thoughts and emotions and memories and difficulties, difficult experiences arise, find your mind, find your skill in staying where you are. Right. Two students rolled up the blinds alike. One has it, one has not. And Woman in the commentary says, you are strictly warned against arguing about having and not having. So he's already, but that doesn't mean we won't argue. That doesn't mean we won't say, well, one rolled the blinds up very mindfully and the other was distracted. How do you know that? That's our mind projecting, right? So the koan is not telling us enough, so we will generously complete it. We will tell the rest of the story. And now what do you have? Nothing really. Nothing has changed. We've just done what we always do. We've projected our own mind, and now we can't see these two students rolling it up a lot because we have shut the door. We have gotten up. We have not remained on that seat. Master Linji taught that there is a true person of no rank beyond having and not having. So then why do we have robes? Receive the precepts, wearing a raksu. Why, monastics, why do we have people progressing through the training, becoming seniors, dharma holders, teachers? Isn't that just a lot of having and not having? Isn't that a lot of high and low? Well, from a very simple perspective, it's expedient means. It's having a sense of, you know, who to ask a question of, who's been studying, who might be able to help. But at a deeper level, how are we going to face in real time that mind that attaches to the meaning of robes and positions and responsibilities and power? How are we going to free ourselves of that if we don't encounter it? I've told the story many times of how when I was a chief disciple, and one of the things that they do in holding that position, which is the process of becoming a senior, is at the end of a service or sitting, they leave the zendo before everybody else. And I grew up in the South where there was a very clear demarcation of high and low, right? Inferior and superior, based on race. And I was immensely uncomfortable with this leaving ahead, because it brought in a lot of associations. And I went to Dada Roshi and I said, you know, I was very calm. I thought I was being very strategic, right? Not revealing my true motive at all, right? Little did I know. And I went to him and I said, you know, I was thinking, I wonder if that was something we could just dispense with, you know? And he looked at me and he smiled and he said, you think that means you're better than everybody else? Busted. I thought that and I did not want to think that. The Buddha has no fixed form. Enlightenment has no fixed form. Delusion has no fixed form. That's the good news. So when we say I am stuck, when I think I am stuck in my practice, literally impossible, right? You are defying the law of the universe. Nothing is stuck, but we can seem stuck. Can we become complacent? Of course. Can we become distant? Can we stop sitting? All of those things are true. But that doesn't mean we're stuck. It just means we're moving in another direction. Things are still moving. Is that the direction you want? Anything we acquire will be taken away. Anything we gain will be lost. This is one of the essential teachings of the Buddha. So to try and find our satisfaction and happiness in things that will fade, they do bring us happiness. They do bring us measures of fulfillment and satisfaction. But they're all in motion. They're all in a state of change. Raising the blinds, lifting your hand, taking a step, picking up a cup of tea and bringing it to your mouth. Is that having or not having? Is that a complete action or an incomplete action? Is that right or wrong? Is that deluded or enlightened? That's what Fa Yen is trying to free us of. So that then we can live in a world where there is right and wrong, where there are tall mountains and low mountains, there is hot and cold, there is good and evil, there are good choices and not so good choices. And we can recognize all of that without being deluded by them, without creating suffering in those recognitions. In every moment, wherever you are, augustly and unmovingly, you have enlightened wisdom, vision, and body. The metaphor that's used is of the sun, which is always shining in every direction radiantly. But sometimes it's cloudy. We don't see it. But even when it's shining and it's very cloudy, some gets through, right? Maybe that's like Buddha nature. Maybe that's how, in the midst of the promise that we have can be so committed and invested in which we have invested so much, that we can begin to wonder, we can begin to doubt, we can begin to seek, because there is some light getting through. So let your mind remain where it is, to return to its original state. And have faith in practice that there's nothing that you're trying to add, nothing that you're trying to remove. You know, Suzuki Roshi said, you are perfect and complete, and you could use a little work. And how to hold both of those. I mean, that's one of the things that we were talking about this recently, I think, in the monastic meeting, about developing the capacity, the natural capacity that we have to be able in one moment to hold something that you see within yourself that's very difficult, painful. And at the same moment to know that that's not all you are. That in one moment you see that you can be very mean-spirited or petty. And at the same time realize that you can be generous and magnanimous. Both are true. And that we are large enough to hold that. That we can hold that there is tremendous suffering in the world and that there are people who create that suffering. And that though the world is more than that, and those actors are more than that. And I was saying, you know, in a way, that's a very sophisticated view, to be able to hold all of that and not just reduce it all down to one thing, which is a very easy reaction and impulse. And you see how easy it is to solicit that from people and in groups, and to build a ideology and a force and an army. Fa Yen is trying to free us of that. One has it and one has not. How to hold the whole. Shanti Deva said that to realize that when something arises within us, anger, disappointment, resentment, somebody says something, you get angry. Shanti Deva says, just as sharp pain arises, although you're not hoping for it, you're not wishing for it, so anger forcibly arises within yourself, although you haven't asked for it. Somebody says something, you didn't say, okay, I'm going to get angry now. You just get angry. You don't even get angry, there's just anger. Right? There's no sense of getting angry, it's just suddenly there's anger. And he says, but he brings our attention to the fact that we're not asking for, not wanting for that to happen. He says a person doesn't intentionally become angry thinking, I shall now get angry. Nor does the anger itself think, I shall now arise, as though it has a force of its own. He says all offenses and transgressions and difficult experiences of all kinds arise under the influence of conditions. They do not arise independently. They do not arise by themselves. And so Buddhism is an examination, a very deep examination of what are those conditions that keep bringing up within us all of our struggles, all of the different aspects of our suffering. And how do we skillfully and with wisdom see and begin to shift those conditions so that rather than bringing up greed, anger, and delusion, we bring up generosity, compassion, patience, loving kindness. They don't exist by themselves. They don't exist within us as any intrinsic quality. They don't exist in the world by themselves. They arise in a state of mutuality. When we live within that world of having and not having, I have it, I don't have it. I want it, I don't want it. Why do you get it? Why don't I get it? That path has no end. There is no peace. There is no rest. It's exhausting. And it's aggressive. And it leads. You know where it leads. It's hard to be compassionate in a world that is reduced to winners and losers. And if you're a winner, how long is that going to last? You better have a big lock on your door because they're coming for you. Because somebody else wants to replace you. So what does it all come down to? What are those roots that the tree is standing on? Who are you? Your body, your face, your voice, your accomplishments, degrees, possessions? Why do those who have more than they could ever spend or use in 1,000 lifetimes, why is that not enough? Why is acquisition never enough? Why does attachment always bring disappointment and anxiety if we look closely? Why, when we are attached to something that is bringing us to the brink of a precipice, will we not relinquish? The Buddha said it's because we believe it will work. And why, when you are letting go of something that is weighing so heavily and you release it, is there that very clear affirmation of release, of buoyancy, a possibility? So if we want to find our way in to this koan, the student of this koan has to be the person rolling up the blind. You roll up the blind. And roll them up with your whole body and mind. Let the entire universe roll up the blind. And in order to do that, you yourself have to let go of right and wrong. You have to let go of approval and disapproval, of getting it right or getting it wrong. In other words, you have to go in alone, solitary, and let that one undivided moment show you who has it and who has not. The poem says, when they are rolled up, bright and clear is the great emptiness. And yet this great emptiness does not yet come up to our teaching. This morning we chanted to be to realize enlightenment, to realize emptiness is not yet enlightenment, right? That's one essential aspect, to realize that we are not separate and distinct. We are not, we don't have some essential, eternal self. Nothing is lacking. Nothing is in excess. All things have the same nature. And that is not yet enlightenment. Why? How do we move forward? How do we bring that forward into our lives? How do we live within the midst of right and wrong, of good and evil, of making progress and not? How do we live within the world of ranks and positions and roles where maybe you are in charge of leadership, maybe you are in charge of receiving instructions? And so Wu Men says, why don't you just cast away emptiness in everything? So having realized emptiness in training, the student is then to let that go. Because it never was or will be something. But we can create something from nothing, which is pretty much what we do all the time. Why don't you cast away emptiness in everything? Then it is so lucid and perfect, even the wind does not pass through. Wu Men says in another poem, when there's no vain thought in your mind, no self-clinging thought, then for you, today is a good day. Because when there's no self-clinging, we're not attaching and projecting all of our ideas about right and wrong. That we solidify, we make absolute. And that is the dogma that we create in the world, that people create and live and die for. An idea, something that has no existence apart from our mind, but that we reify and build up and build up and build up. Think about our friends in Ukraine who are fighting for their country, rightly. What is a country? What is a country? It's an idea, right? It doesn't live in the soil. The boundaries of that country doesn't exist outside of an idea. A fence does not know itself as a boundary or a border. It's just stone or metal. And that idea of country can be something that brings us together, that is uplifting, that is inspiring, that helps us to organize together and create something wonderful, like a vision that all people are created equal and are endowed with the inalienable right to have a fair shot at a good life. Or it can be a tyranny. It's up to us. That's what the Buddha realized. That's how powerful we are. And when we don't understand it, when we don't examine that, we get swept away by our own minds. But to get to the root of it is difficult. As the Buddha said, the Dharma is not something that can be understood through pondering or analysis. Only those who are Buddhas can understand it. Only Buddhas can realize enlightenment. Well, the good news is, he's talking to you. Having Buddha nature. You know, often we can think of practice as something that we do when all of the other necessary things have been done. Cleaning the house, getting the kids off to school, making meals, going to work, paying our bills. All important. Because if we don't do those things, the consequences of not doing those things become apparent pretty quickly, right? Sink fills up. House looks like a dump. You can't pay your bills. Life begins to come apart. And the challenge of practice, of spiritual practice, of any authentic path in, is that the signs of not engaging are more, can be more subtle, right? Particularly if we're not encouraged to see them, to recognize them. But I think the more we see, the more clearly we see both the consequences of practicing and examining and turning towards what's true and of not, then it becomes more and more clear this is not really a luxury item or shouldn't be. It's of the same stuff as what keeping our house in order is about. And it's also, it's not just something that is benefiting us. When you take care of your house, you benefit. That's obvious. How your neighbor benefits from that is not so obvious. But when you take care of this house, we all benefit. And that becomes something we actually, every day, can now offer and will be offering. And so I just want to encourage all of us to, and particularly those of you who are here exploring this weekend, you know, I was remembering Dada Roshi would often say these weekends, he would say on Friday night, you know, just open your mind, take it in, digest it, and then when you leave, chew it up, spit out what you don't like. But that if this has helped you in some way to strengthen your sense of your path, to clarify that this is or is not your path, then I feel like we have done you a service. And that if there is a better path, please find it and give yourself to it. Because we're actually counting on you. We're counting on each other. I've been feeling, carrying this catastrophe that is unfolding in Europe, as I'm sure many of you are. And it's like I was saying earlier, how do we hold suffering? Right? The Buddha said, if we try to suppress it or turn away from it or deny it, it's still there. And it has more strength now because we're not attending to it. And we're not learning how to attend to it. If we turn towards it and just get mired and mired and mired, that's not helping anyone. It's not helping us. It's not helping anyone else. That's not a viable path. What is that middle path? And so practice is learning how to face that suffering. And the Buddha said, you will need courage. Very early sutras, fearlessness, the courage to face what is difficult. Why are we so adept at not facing it? Because on a certain level, I'd rather not, right? If we're just honest, I'd rather not. I'd rather not, if you please, this be happening. I would rather live in a world where this is not happening. We'd get probably not a unanimous vote on that, but probably a majority. But this is the world. So how do we face and learn how to face suffering, right? And be a practitioner. So not mired, not denying. And we can be practicing well, and still there is a weight. There is a presence. And that's okay. That's your compassion. That's your love. That's your concern. And how to carry that knowingly, lightly, and sometimes with great effort. And then within that, to ask the question, what can I do today? What is my field of influence? How can I extend that? How can I be of service? And so I'll end with a poem. The one who makes the order for the one who aims the gun, towards the one who runs for safety with the ones who've just been born, while the ones who plead for mercy to the ones who cannot hear, while all are thinking of those in their homes they love so dear, this web, do you see it? All caught, all free. So let us together turn and listen. There is a pure spring wind, life-giving, an endless spring, a nationless field. This is, after all, why the wise ones have appeared in the world. This is why the sacred things make themselves known to you who stop and listen. May we May we receive and make use of them, for now is the time of our calling. Each day, it is so. It has always been so. And we have that capacity. We have been losing. We have been facing adversity, experiencing loss, having our hearts broken since we've been walking on two legs. It is built into us to be able to live in this world and to heal and to be healing. But we need a path. So, shall we have lunch?
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.